I saw this video. It came up on my feed.
That's another deal. You asked me about my line. You said the Chosen.
That's a line you draw.
That's a line I draw.
Yeah. Have you seen The Chosen? Have you watched it? Yeah, I'm watching.
2CV, man.
So this is Vadi Bakum, and he's on the Babylon Bee podcast, and he says that 2CV, the second commandment, is what prevents him from watching The Chosen. Now, interestingly enough, Dallas Jenkins responded to this. I'm going to look at another person that indirectly responded to this that I think is very interesting.
And that series
betraying
there.
Jesus as idolatry or portraying Jesus as
idolatry and then, you know, some of the,
Vodi's take on the show prompted Dallas Jenkins, the creator and producer of The Chosen, to respond to Vodi's interview comments on his prized TV series.
So here is actually what happened. LDS love the same Jesus, or LDS are Christians, that would be a problem, and here's why. Not because there aren't LDS folks who are Christians, and not because there aren't LDS and evangelicals who love the same Jesus, but because it would be wrong of me to ever say that any one group believes any one thing altogether.
That's not the case, right?
The major problem with Dallas's statements is that he draws no clear doctrinal line between those who are and aren't Christians. If you believe in a different Jesus, a different gospel, and have an unbiblical view of salvation, then you aren't a Christian in the biblical sense of the term. It doesn't mean a Mormon can interview you or invite you on their podcast. In fact, Vodi Bakum addressed that on the Babylon Bee podcast when he referred to Glenn Beck, a Mormon, and also the owner of Blaze TV.
Now, specifically, what would be a standard that you'd be like, well, I can't really, like, would it be a Jen Hatmaker? Mm-hmm. Or like a Richard Rohr or something like that, you'd be like, nah, those guys aren't even Christians.
It would depend on what it was.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. Going on the Blaze.
The Glenn Beck interview.
Going on with Glenn Beck.
I saw that.
You know, I've been with Glenn Beck a number of times. There are no restraints put on me. I can communicate the gospel. Mm-hmm. I can be, you know, free and bold, and you know, and he and I have a relationship behind the scenes and off the camera. But when there is a platform, and I'm not going to be muzzled, right? Mm-hmm. I've gone on CNN.
Vodi makes an interesting point, and I 100% agree with him here. I disagree with the Second Commandment thing, and I'm going to explain why in a second. But I 100% agree with him that if you could go on someone's platform that's not practicing the same faith and you cannot be muzzled, you can absolutely leverage that. I do find it interesting that I don't know if this is how Vodi feels, but that's not extended to Dallas as well. That the assumption is, because there are people who are involved and have been involved who are not evangelicals, that therefore Dallas doesn't have creative control. I think that's a stretch. And I think that it's the same exact thing. You're utilizing someone else's resources, platform, infrastructure to communicate what you want to communicate. And I think from everything I've heard, Dallas is 100% in control creatively of what The Chosen is doing. And he has a Messianic rabbi, a couple pastors, I think I want to say an Orthodox priest and a Catholic priest that are a part of it. I think that this is a bit of a double standard if this is the way this is being positioned, okay? Because I think if you can go on a Mormon show, why can't a Mormon help you with the infrastructure of launching something, right? Is The Chosen pretending to replace the Bible? Because I think this is where you just have wrong expectations. The Chosen was never intended to be a replacement for the Bible or a visual Bible. The Chosen is historic fan fiction. It's not a church. It's not a ministry. It's historic fan fiction. It's a television show. It's a multi-series television show. So if you're saying biblical, as in it is not verbatim the gospel as it's laid out in the four gospels, well, then Dallas would tell you that. If you're saying it's not biblical, as in it's contradicting the Bible, I would say you're reaching, and I don't think that's the definition of biblical. I think within the Bible, there's all types of literary devices used, right? And so The Chosen writes in the aspects of that are not in the narrative of the gospel. Yeah, and it's not intended to replace the Bible. And it says that. Literally, it tells you that the very first time you click into it. It tells you that.
In a full partnership with Mormons on spiritual endeavors, which is a violation of your Christian witness. John MacArthur, for example, got invited by Ben Shapiro of The Daily Wire, and he shared the gospel with him unashamedly.
Speaking of folks not being muzzled, when Pastor John went on with Ben Shapiro for the Sunday special, Pastor John MacArthur, I think he had a similar philosophy where he said, we're not aligned, but Ben Shapiro is not going to muzzle me. So right. I'm going to preach the gospel, and he did. It was beautiful. He preached from Isaiah 50.
John MacArthur can go on Ben Shapiro's podcast. Vodi Bakum can go on Glenn Beck's podcast, and they can be aligned and or platformed by non-Christians, specifically Jews and Mormons. Yet when Dallas Jenkins is platformed by a Mormon or supported by a Mormon, Angel Studios, which they are not partnered with anymore, it's a problem. I think that's a bit of a double standard.
In response to Vodi's comments on The Chosen, Dallas Jenkins states that, "I love Vodi Bagham, but I think the stake is misapplied. The second commandment is clearly referring to objects of worship, and most likely, specifically, objects of worship that compete with God. This is exactly what the second commandment states. You shall not make for yourself a carved image."
I love that Dallas clapped back with Bible. "You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." This is about creating something that you are worshiping as a God. "You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers who claim to the children, to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments." So this is not applicable to this passage. But the verse is not saying that you can't have an image or a painting of Jesus. He writes, "Pastor Bauckham's logic is that because a movie or show portraying Christ is showing someone who comes from heaven, then is idolatrous. Or because it's portrayal of God and image of God, it's idolatrous. But it's not the portrayal or image itself that's the issue. If it was, then the verse would say anything on earth or even underwater, wrong day, is clearly the worship of. When you worship something, that is the issue. So it's not portraying it. And again, I'm going to show you guys how church history backs this up in a moment.
After reading Dallas's comments, I can recall an article about a pastor who, when he goes to pray, the image that always comes onto his mind when he's referring to the Lord Jesus Christ is the Jesus of the Chosen.
The claim being made here is that there's a pastor. I can recall an article of a pastor who claims that when he prays, he sees the image of Jonathan Romey. So Dallas gives a biblical response to a biblical issue. Now, I don't see this article in this video, right? I Googled pastor sees chosen Jesus when he prays. And, you know, shocker, no such article comes up. Now, am I saying that these people don't exist? I'm sure there's someone somewhere who has an issue and creates an idolatry, an idol of Jonathan Romey. I'm sure those people probably exist. But to say there's a pastor who wrote an article and not provide the article, I think that's I'm going to call cap on that. Not to mention, if these things do happen, hasn't The Chosen consistently condemned this? Hasn't The Chosen consistently said, "We are not the Bible. Jonathan is not Jesus. Don't use this as a replacement for the Bible. Don't you look at Jonathan as Jesus." Is it the pastor's responsibility to guard his heart and what he's envisioning? Or is it The Chosen's responsibility? That would be my question. Maybe I got to go really, 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 really deep. But if this article exists, by all means, send it to me. Now, here is something I wanted to pull from church history. If you have an issue with The Chosen, this is really going to poke. The biggest atheist creator on YouTube, interestingly enough, platformed Jonathan Pujol, who is an Eastern Orthodox guy, probably most known for appearing in a lot of Jordan Peterson content. Now, Jonathan Pujol creates icons. He's well known for creating Eastern Orthodox icon. Okay, so shout out to Alex O'Connor, okay? Alex O'Connor's an atheist. I like hearing his articles because it keeps me, his arguments because it keeps me sharp. But I appreciate him even more for platforming Jonathan Pujol.
Humans, we were talking earlier about iconography. Humans seem obsessed with making icons. They love making icons. And in fact, in the old scriptural tradition, part of the problem is that Moses pops up to the mountain and comes back down and then they've made a new icon. It's like they can't stop making icons all the time. That doesn't go away just because we don't believe in God anymore. Society is secularizing and all that. What do you think are the icons of the secular age?
Notice what Alex O'Connor did. He did the same thing that Vadi did, which is why I'm not mad at Vadi or anybody who's like, "Yo, I can't watch The Chosen because it messes me up and I start seeing Jesus as Jonathan and Jonathan as Jesus and it's just too much for me." I go, respect. My only issue is when we start saying it in an absolute and certain standard as if we know for a fact that it's breaking the second commandment and as if church history can validate this.
It's especially in Christian theology, like what we'll do is we will separate the difference between icon and idol. And the difference between an icon and idol is that the icon affords the transcendent. That is, it is pointed to. It is not something which stops at itself, but rather leads up towards higher participation. So it's like if I encounter an image of St. John the Baptist, well, the image of St. John the Baptist only exists in my life because he pointed to Christ. And that image of Christ only exists in my life because he pointed to the infinite, invisible, transcendent. And so that is the way that icons function. They're a kind of ladder of participation. The idea about idols is that in some way...
Icons function as a way to point you to that which is transcendent. Not to be the source, but to point you to the source.
The idea about idols is that in some ways they are factitious. They try to capture it all in themselves, right? They try to kind of capture your attention and keep it within its sphere. The idol doesn't offer itself up to a higher participation. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that in our world now, we are surrounded with idols constantly. That is,
So the idol is the object of worship. An icon points you to the source and the object of worship. Oh, this could preach, man. When I have a cross here, my Oriental Armenian cross, or when my brother CP paints this image of Jesus, no one is worshiping this cross or this painting. This is a symbol to get you to think of that which is transcendent. And this is one of the issues, if I'm going to be honest, within my own community, this is one of the issues with Protestants. Is Protestants throw out church history and go, oh, we know that there has been this practice of icons, this practice of art, these beautiful churches made, these stained glass windows made. We know this is all historic. And the natural evolution of that, by the way, is what? Continuing to use the technology, which the church has always used, to articulate the gospel with the technology available, which is now film. Instead of doing that, Protestants would just be like, we're going to read on our own and ignore all of church history. That becomes an issue. Which again, if you feel convicted by watching The Chosen, don't watch The Chosen. The issue is when you create an absolute standard with certainty and say all of Christendom is wrong for doing something that the church has practiced for thousands of years.
We are constantly asked to give our attention to things in ways which are purely subservient to the thing itself, right? Advertising itself has a form of idolatry to it, because sometimes advertising can be pointing to a higher good, but most of the time it's not. Most of the time it's just like, buy this thing, it will accomplish all your desires. I will give you what you want if you get this thing. And so there's a sense in which if I can just get that, then I will get what I want. And that's the way in which, you know, idols are represented in the Old Testament. If you look at that story of the calf, the golden calf, for example, right? It's like Moses goes up to get the revelation. People down here were like, well, we need something here. We need something to kind of gather us together. They make this golden calf and then they have an orgy, basically. The idol affords you your desires. You know, that's why it can be related to anything that you give your attention to too much, whether it's, you know, whether it's alcohol and all the classical things that can capture you and can become your god for all intents and purposes.
Would it be right to say that pornography or alcohol are idols? And the thing that people do with idols is that they worship them. And I suppose another thing that I'm a bit unclear on is what it means to worship.
The thing, and listen to Alex picking up on this, the things that people do with idols is they worship them. It is not the intent of The Chosen or Jonathan or Dallas for you or me to worship The Chosen in the place or as if it's God in the Bible.
Worship.
The best way to understand worship is you could say that it is the highest point of your attention, right? It is the point of attention in which there is no higher. It doesn't fit into a higher good. So a good example, like this is not woo-woo. Like I don't want to be careful for people to think like, oh, hey, what's Jonathan talking about, right? So it's like you're making food and you're cutting the onions, right? You give attention to that. But that attention is bound in the recipe that you're making. And the making of that recipe is bound in the fact that you're going to sit together as a family and eat. And that sitting together as a family and eat is bound into the love of the family itself as something which provides, you know, and then you can keep scaling that up.
Come on.
All the way up to the highest good, which is the infinite transcendent. There are some things in the world that are more in danger of capturing our attention fully. But alcohol is the good. It's fine. It can become a god, and we know people for who it does become a god, and it does kind of take over their lives. And it's the same with, I wouldn't say pornography, I would say sex. I'd say sexuality is obviously something good, and but it has to be ordered in a certain way for it to not become something that traps you and kind of takes over your attention, so that you can't think of other things, and you can't put your attention into higher, you know, and you, everybody knows it, like, especially if you remember when you were, I mean, I'm older now, but when I was 19 or whatever, right, it was really difficult to think, I mean, you think about sex all the time, it would take over your field of experience. You would see the world through the lens of sex, right? You would notice things, and things, the world would kind of organize itself in that way. And that can be dangerous, because that's not actually how the world works. It's, the world isn't only made of sex. It's made of all kinds of other things that have to fit together towards higher goods.
When people pervert good things, they're idolizing the entertainers, the actors. Not the actors are positioning themselves as gods, or The Chosen is positioning themselves as a replacement for the Bible. Everybody I've ever talked to that's ever watched The Chosen has always said, hey, watching The Chosen makes me want to get back in scripture. I went to the premiere just 2 weeks ago, and no, this isn't a paid sponsored video. No one paid me to say this. Dallas didn't pay. Matter of fact, when I hit Dallas about this entire pastor who prays and sees Jonathan article, he didn't even text me back about this, right? Because he probably has other things he's worried about right now. But when I went to The Chosen, this is what it did for me. I'm watching it, and there's a scene where they go to Caesarea Philippi. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, is this in the Bible? I'm just curious, because this is really interesting. And you know what I did? It made me go back to the Bible, and I pull up my Logos Bible software, and I look at Caesarea Philippi. And everything they depicted about Caesarea Philippi in that episode was directly correlated from what Logos said about Caesarea Philippi. So it's interesting that the times where I go, is that in the Bible? And I go and look, I'm like, oh, that's actually in the Bible. The parts I'm the most conflicted by or confused by, I go and look, I'm like, oh, that's actually in there. And it gets me back into Bible study. And the parts that you guys flip out about are like character development. Oh, Mary backslid. Oh, Jesus, they built a stage for Jesus and Jesus would have never had a stage. Jesus was rehearsing his sermon. How dare Jesus? You know, Jesus went up there and just freestyled it. You don't think it's within the realm of possibilities considering that the Gospels have the same sermons, but they're kind of different in Luke than they are in Matthew? You don't think it's possible that he probably recited that same sermon multiple times? And that he may have spent time thinking about what he was going to say before he just said, you know, anyway, so the parts that people have issue with are so funny to me. Now, let's come back to this Mormon conversation, because it came up in Alan Parr's video. And Dallas responded, and I don't know if Alan ever made a video addressing it, but Dallas made something very clear, which is his point was not that all Mormons believe in the same Jesus as Christians do. His point, and I can't say much else because I know one person. We have one mutual friend that I know that's over there. His point was that his friends that came out of or still affiliated with the LDS church are, he believe in the same Jesus he believes in. His friends that he's had experience with, not the church's doctrinal positions, not what the church believes, not the history of Joseph Smith, not any of that stuff. The church is not what he was stamping. He said his personal friends that he has that are Mormons that he believes in the same Jesus. That's what he specifically said, and he was careful to pick his words. So having said that, I did a little research, and I asked some people around that are a little deep, and come to find out, now I'm not speaking, this is hearsay on my part. I'm not saying this is as fact, but speaking to someone that's a credible, solid source alerted me that there is a segment, potentially, allegedly, within the LDS church that's trying to re-reform the LDS church or aspects of the LDS church. And there are actually some Mormons that are trying to come to a more evangelical orthodox view of Jesus. And they're drifting from orthodoxy within what they would call the Mormon orthodoxy and are slowly trying to make a change within some of these Mormons. I don't know if that's true. Hearing Dallas say that and clarify Alan's video, because I got Dallas and Alan connected, and Dallas like, I never said that all Mormons or all LDS people or all LDS theology. Well, I said re-reforming because there was a reformation within a Mormon church before, I guess, post like all the polygamy stuff, I think. And so it's interesting that what his point was something different. Now I'm not stamping that. I'm not co-signing that, and I don't know enough about that, but I do know that there are people that are in heretical camps that eventually come out of them. We see, according to the Bible, that prayer is extremely important in terms of us being transformed from the inside out when we get aligned with God's will. For the Christians watching this channel, I want you guys to implement these spiritual disciplines in your day-to-day life. And the only way I've been able to do this consistently is through writing down my prayers in a prayer journal that does a few things. One, it allows me to reflect and come to God humbly and ask Him to move on my behalf. And two, it allows me to document my prayers, which ultimately helped me remember the very things that I was praying for and see the hand of God tangibly in my life when He answers them. So I would urge you, consider writing down your prayers. It could be in a blank notebook. It could even be on your phone. Or you could check out the one I personally designed and used for my own quiet time and spiritual discipline that I think will be a huge blessing. It's the exact structure and system that I've used for years to pray and be more consistent in my spiritual disciplines. You can pick yours up today by clicking the link in the pinned comment below. All right, I'll see you over there. Peace.